Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
Christmas, the time we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Here in the U.S., we don't fear celebrating his birth during outdoor services in our churches or in our homes. But elsewhere in the world, that is not the case. A recent op-ed in the Christian Post notes, quote, "For those who hate Christians, what better day to demonstrate that hatred than the day Christians celebrate Christ's birth," unquote. The author of that op-ed is my guest today. Todd Nettleton is Vice President for Message at the Voice of the Martyrs and host of the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Thanks, Todd, for being with us again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, we don't think about or fear celebrating Christmas here in the U.S. I think that it boggles the minds of Christians here in the U.S. as to what other Christians have to consider as Christmas Day approaches. I know Nigeria's been in the news a lot, where even throughout the year, thousands of Christians have been killed. So I know that would be a primary target, I'm sure, of the anti-Christian folks, I'll put it like that. So how can or how will Christians respond? How have they in the past responded when it comes to Christians in other countries?
You know, I think the important thing is to realize that as we celebrate Christmas here, most of us are celebrating in complete safety. Often we're gathered with family, we're gathered, maybe we have a Christmas Eve worship service or a Christmas morning worship service, and we don't even think about the security aspects of that. Oh, what if someone attacks us? What if we become a target? Christmas is a day when Christians in hostile areas and restricted nations are targeted. In the last few years, we've seen attacks in Nigeria, Iraq, Egypt, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Last year, there was a letter sent to Christians in one district of Bangladesh that basically said, before you go to your Christmas service, say your goodbyes to your family because you'll never see them again. So that's reality for Christians living in those places in the world. They just understand. And, you know, as I wrote in the op-ed, if you hate Christians, if you hate Christianity, what better day to make a statement about that than the day Christians are celebrating the birth of Christ? It is a day that you see as a day to make a statement if you hate Christianity. And for Christians, they just have to factor that in. When we gather together, they know that there's a risk.
Again, something we here in the U.S. don't even consider as we go to church on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but other Christians around the world. Are these mostly, I would assume, in restricted and hostile nations? I would assume that would be the case. Although I just heard earlier this week where, I believe it's in Germany, where they're putting up barricades to protect, you know, Christmas bazaars and stuff that, you know, Christians put on as part of the Christmas celebration. So it's expanding beyond what we would consider hostile or restricted nations. But the main targets, though, are, of course, those Christians in hostile and restricted nations. I think, you know, we here in the U.S. need to thank the Lord that we live in a country where we can feel at least, you know, a whole lot safer than those Christians in other countries. And I know that you mentioned, this was just a year ago, but you also mentioned in your op-ed that in the days leading up to Christmas 2024, as 46 people were killed in various attacks across Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of Congo, believers simply seeking to worship, pray, and celebrate the birth of Christ. That was just a year ago. Just a year ago that Christians, 46 were killed in Nigeria, and, you know, days leading up to Christmas itself.
Yeah, and one of the things about those attacks is they were multi-site coordinated attacks. So it wasn't like one guy, you know, decided to do something and went down the street to the church closest to his house. It's many guys getting together, planning these attacks carefully. And one of the challenges for us in America, typically we have a Christmas Eve service maybe at our churches. In much of the world, they have a Christmas morning worship service. That is a part of how Christians celebrate Christmas. And so that becomes a, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but a target-rich environment mm-hmm. for those who would attack Christians is, hey, we have a church full of Christians in this place, and here, look, a few miles away, we have another church full of Christians. And so the big concern is these coordinated attacks, and it clearly is a desire to make Christmas a time of violence, to make a statement on the day that Christians consider one of the holiest days on the calendar, to make that a day of bloodshed and a day of death instead of a day of celebration.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. What's the purpose of those perpetuating these attacks? You know, of course, the whole news is in the media, so they get that coverage. And I think the purpose of the entire thing is, of course, to instill fear in Christians, letting them know in a very public way that you will be targeted if you go to church, or if you're even a Christian, as far as I go. Is this mostly happening in Muslim countries or where there's a Muslim insurgence, such as in Nigeria?
Most of the places where we see it, yes, our Islamic background or the attackers are motivated by radical Islam. Egypt is a place where there is a significant Christian population. The Coptic Christian population of Egypt is very large, but it is also very public. They have, you know, well-known churches. People know where the church is. There's a cross on the top of it. And so that can kind of make them a target as well, just because they are more open in Egypt than maybe some other Islamic context. But typically, we are seeing these attacks by radical Islamists and those who would target Christians out of that sort of desire to serve Allah.
Well, in the case of, you said Nigeria, it was a target. Several locations, several churches were targeted in this attack back last year. Do they get any support, the Christians? Do the Christians get any support from local authorities? Is there any type of investigation? Are there ever any arrests? Are there trials? Or does anything happen as far as local support from local authorities?
That is a great question. And oftentimes it is it's very contextual. So in some places, yes, they get help from the government. I think particularly of Egypt. Egypt wants for these attacks not to happen. And so there is an investigation. There are people who are held accountable. Sometimes in northern Nigeria, it is not that way. There is a sort of air quote investigation, but then they never can find anybody. And so nobody is ever put on trial. And there have even been stories, that reputable stories of the attackers wearing military uniforms, or the military being called but not showing up for hours after the attack. And so there's always that question of, particularly as we talk about northern Nigeria, is there a lack of will by the government to stop these attacks, or is there a lack of ability to stop these attacks, or is it a little bit of both? Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things right now is in our country is President Trump has declared Nigeria a country of particular concern on the issue of religious freedom. And so there's that question of, okay, if the U.S. government wants to help the Nigerian government to be more responsive, what does that look like? How does that help work? Is it even possible that with some help they would be more responsive? Or again, is it a lack of will? Is it really they actually don't want to stop these attacks? Those are big questions. And hopefully in the coming year, as the State Department sort of walks out that pathway of country of particular concern status, hopefully we'll get some answers to some of those questions.
Hopefully we will, yes. Is it Nigeria is not a majority Muslim nation, is it? Isn't it mostly Christian or not?
It's a very interesting mix because it's about 50-50 between Christians and Muslims, but it is very much territorially different. Okay. So in the South, you have majority Christians. In the South, you actually have mega churches that are operating. They'll have a service. It might look a lot like your service this Sunday. They'll gather, they'll worship. It'll be great. In the North, though, it is predominantly Muslim. And in some parts of the North, almost 100% Muslim. And so there is where we see the attacks. We see Christians being kidnapped. We see pastors being killed. And that typically, like I say, in that part of the country, it can often be almost 100% Muslim, even though if you look at the overall stats, it's about 50-50. And you kind of say, well, that's pretty evenly divided. Yes, as a country, it's evenly divided. But in any particular village, it might be, you know, 98-2 one way or the other.
Wow. So it's all really territorial as far as the response from authorities when it comes to these attacks and such.
And typically the authorities are elected, obviously, out of that electorate. And so in the northern states, you have Muslims in, you know, leading the states. You have Muslims leading the villages. In the South, typically, you will have more Christian presence in government positions. But that certainly affects how these laws are carried out and how decisions are made.
Elections have consequences even in other countries. If it's 98% Muslim and 2% Christian, there's going to be Muslims on the ballot. Probably 100% Muslims on the ballot, but I'm just guessing.
Courage. Yeah, and Nigeria has gone in past years, Nigeria would try to split at the national level, they would try to split the power. So if the president was a Muslim, the vice president would be a Christian and vice versa. And typically they alternated. After a Christian prime minister, then there came a Muslim prime minister. And so they have kind of gotten away from that in recent years. And you'll have a leadership team that is all Muslim or all Christian. And so it seems like, from my perspective as an outsider, they're not trying as hard to sort of present that public face of, no, we live side by side. We can get along with each other. Even like the government leaders have gotten away from sort of portraying that in the way they fill out their leadership teams.
I'm wondering if all the attacks and kidnappings in northern Nigeria has impacted their decision not to be so bipartisan or so cooperative. I wonder if that's an impact. Of course, we don't know for sure because, like you say, we're outsiders. We're just looking in. So we don't know for sure just what their thinking is.
And every person who runs for president of Nigeria says, I'm the guy who can get a handle on the security situation. I'm the guy who can put a stop to Boko Haram. Whether they're Muslim or Christian, they all promise, you know, that they're the person who will deliver on that. And so far, nobody has.
Typical politician making campaign promises that they can't keep, for sure.
Yeah, that crosses national boundaries, too.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. Yeah. So the purpose is, fear. They want to instill fear in Christians. They want Christians to know they're not welcome. They want Christians to know that if they go to worship on Christmas Day or days leading up to Christmas, then they will be targeted, or there's a very good chance that their gathering will be targeted. I'm thinking of China. I know China doesn't have any, they have a state-run church, but Christians in China, to do any kind of Christmas worship, they'd have to do it underground anyway. And their fear would be the police coming, not some outside group like Boko Haram, but their fear would be the cops showing up, the Chinese police showing up to disrupt their service and to haul them off to prison. So it's not just religion that causes the issue, the divide. It's also, of course, government policies. In this case, atheistic communism.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And our Chinese brothers and sisters would worry, as you say, it would be the police. They would be charged with a crime. They would go to jail, as opposed to Nigerian brothers and sisters who are worried about a bombing or a shooting and that they will be killed. But they don't face the fear of going to jail under their government.
Do you think fear will stop Christians from gathering as Christmas is getting closer and closer? They know past attacks have happened. And, of course, the purpose is to instill fear. Do you think that will cause Christians not to gather?
I do not. I think Christians in Nigeria, in the other countries that we've talked about, are committed to gathering together. They're committed to worshiping the Lord. And they see that Christmas gathering as a key part of that, a key part of being in the family of God, celebrating being a part of the family of God. And so certainly they will be aware of the danger. They will be aware of the risk. I remember going to a church service in Nigeria. This was not a Christmas service. It was just a normal Sunday morning service. But they had people from the youth group posted outside the church just to keep an eye on things and make sure nobody pulled up a car too close to the church with possibly a car bomb, make sure whoever was coming in the door that they kind of knew who they were. And so I suspect that will be true at a lot of Christmas services as well, not only in Nigeria, but in other countries as well. Hey, there is somebody out there keeping an eye on us. There is somebody watching for trouble, but they will not stop meeting together.
I wonder how many youth groups here in the U.S. would be willing to do that.
It's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is for sure. I mean, some churches here in the U.S. have security because, you know, not that we fear bombings or such on Christmas, you know, Christmas Eve or such as that, but there have been incidences of shootings here in the U.S. and churches here in the U.S. and cars driving into the churches, but nothing on the scale that our Christian brothers and sisters around the world face, not only on Christmas Day, but every time they gather to worship. And in some cases, just the fact that they're known as Christians poses problems and poses issues for them in their villages and in their communities. So as Christians here in the U.S., who again are not facing the possibility of their church being bombed or shooters coming in and shooting up the church on Christmas Eve when we gather or Christmas Day, what can we here in the U.S. do for our Christian brothers and sisters who face such threats?
The biggest thing we can do is simply to pray for them and to pray. Obviously, we want to pray for God's protection over them. But we need to be reminded as we gather to celebrate Christ's birth, as we gather around the table for, a beautiful meal, time with our families, we need to be aware that we have other members of our family around the world and they're at risk during this Christmas season. And just to be reminded of them, to pray for protection for them. And that's really the biggest way that we can stand with them during this Christmas season.
Absolutely. Yeah, that should be utmost, I would think, and I would hope, in Christians' minds here in the U.S., not what am I going to get for Christmas or what am I going to have for the Christmas meal or such, but we need to be reminded that there are others, brothers and sisters around the world, who won't have the meal to eat. They may well be living in a refugee camp, having been removed or chased from their villages by those who do not like, I'll put it like that, do not like Christians. And I mean, there's tens of thousands of Christians in refugee camps. We tend to forget that. I've seen pictures in your all's magazine. I've seen pictures of these refugee camps where there's tens of thousands of Christians in these camps who barely survive. And it's, again, something that we here in the U.S. do not comprehend. So we definitely need to be praying for our brothers and sisters around the world, this not only this Christmas season, but on a daily basis, because they face the threat of being attacked for their belief in Jesus Christ every single day in some cases. So,
amen.
What are some of the resources that Voice of the Martyrs has on your website?
Since we're talking about praying for persecuted Christians, one of the resources that we have is an app for your smartphone or your tablet. And every single day, it pulls up a new prayer request for our persecuted brothers and sisters around the world. So every day of the year, your phone can buzz. You can actually set it to remind you at a certain time each day and say, hey, I'm going to pray for persecuted Christians. It will pull up a request for that day. You can pray specifically throughout the year. That is a great tool to help you. The app also has other resources inside of it, ebooks, audiobooks, actually two full-length feature films are free inside the app. So just wherever you get apps for your phone, you can search for Voice of the Martyrs or search for VOM app. That is a great tool. On our website, persecution.com, we offer a free magazine. You can sign up at the top of the page to get that. The other thing I would point people to, and again, it's time we're praying. We're also thinking about New Year's resolutions. The Global Prayer Guide for 2026 is brand new, updated with countries from around the world. And it also is a guide to help you pray. And so it has a listing for each country where Christians are persecuted. It gives you an idea of, okay, who are the persecutors? What is it like to be a Christian there? How hard is it to get a Bible? Those types of things so that you can pray specifically throughout the year. So that's another resource that's available on our website, persecution.com.
Fantastic. And I would hope that our listeners would check that website out and also the app that you mentioned to remind us. Again, here in the U.S., we don't understand. We really don't understand persecution. We can say we're being persecuted because somebody calls us a bad name. That's not persecution. That's not the real definition of persecution when it comes to comparing our lives here in the U.S. to others in restricted and hostile nations. We just don't understand. So thanks so much, Todd. And persecution.com is your all's website. And I encourage folks to check that out. But thanks for being with us, Todd, and you and your family have a Merry Christmas.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.